When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season two of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Weird House Cinema. My name is Rob Lamb.
And my name is Joe McCormick. And today's movie is a 1991 Japanese film called Zayram, or maybe better to say Zayram. Because the Zayram really sounds like the Tennessee take on the name of the alien in this film.
Yeah.
But hey, what do you know? This is our very first space bounty hunter movie. And I think I'll have to be honest and say that Zayram is not the most scintillating movie I have ever seen, but it has a really great central monster. It has a fun bounty hunter, and it is light years beyond the quality of the other main space bounty hunter title in my mental database, which is also from 1991 and is called Abraxas, Guardian of the Universe. Rob, have you seen this one with Jesse the Body Ventura?
I have. I believe I watched the Riff Tracks version of it, and I remember it being bad, and I definitely remember the two principal cast members.
Abraxas goes way back. Like, when I very first started getting into B-movies in, like, high school, you know, when my friends and I were going to the the used book and DVD store and digging through their, like, trash pile to see what we could find, this is one of the ones we dug up. So it's got Jesse the Body Ventura as the space bounty hunter, and it's got Sven Ole Thorsen, who you might know from, he was in Conan, I think. And they're running they're running around some town in Ontario, and Sven is the fugitive, and I recall he keeps grabbing people and asking them if they know how to compute the anti-life equation.
Sven shows up in a number of different Arnold movies. He was kind of like part of the ensemble, I believe. But then eventually starts showing up, doing solo projects as well.
Do you think they originally wanted Arnold for Abraxas, but he, went on to do Terminator 2 or something?
I can't imagine Arnold was ever in talks for Abraxas. I think this project was in a different orbit entirely.
But hey, a space bounty hunter can be a lot of fun because, you have like two parties arrive from other worlds. Now they're here on Earth and there's already a chase going on. So, like, you know, it's not like you have to get to that part. Once they're here, one is already in pursuit of the other. And hey, that's a good setup.
Yeah, absolutely. In general, the bounty hunter scenario makes for good fiction, especially when, you know, because you can do the same thing. Like, who's this mysterious individual chasing this other mysterious individual? Well, you're going to have to explain it to the bystanders and they become part of the whole plot. But yeah, throw in space and aliens and you've got yourself a winning formula. And I think that's one of the things that I like about Zairam is that it's a pretty simple formula. They get into a fair amount of complexity with the monster itself, but in terms of the basic plotting, and to a certain extent the world building, they keep it simple. This is a movie where the title is the name of the monster, so you know it's going to be monster-centric.
There's extremely little plot in this movie.
Yeah.
But what it lacks in story complexity, I would say it somewhat makes up for in the form of the far more interesting than Sven Ole Thorsen fugitive, which is an elegantly haberdashed bipedal star beast who has so many "now I reveal my true form" moments. I lost count of them. Like every time it "now I reveal my true forms," there's another one coming.
That's right. My son walked in and watched part of this with me because this is ultimately a pretty harmless movie. It's got a little bit of monster blood and monster grossness in it and some sci-fi weapon fire, but for the most part, pretty wholesome. So he was watching part of this and he was at least acting a little exasperated. He was into the monster designs, but he's like, haven't they almost killed this thing like 6 times?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, they have. Luckily, it finally sticks. But I'll tell you something else that sticks. Yeah, this monster design sticks with you because I had never seen this film in its entirety, but I think I caught part of it back in the 90s on the Sci-Fi Channel. They had a dubbed version, I think they showed. And it was one of those where, you know, who knows what else was going on, but I only caught just a glimpse of it, just enough to watch like one or two scenes with the title creature, this hulking, relentless alien bioweapon that you know, that seems like this thoroughly unique amalgam of alarming features, you know, which is good in any monster because monsters are often this sort of amalgam. But it's a monster where its primary form, the one that gets the most screen time, it suggests elements of samurai and oni, mushrooms and stingrays. You know, obviously, there's a little bit of xenomorph sprinkled in there. There's also a sense of the cyclops and just much, much more. Like, it seems like they've added enough elements that it just becomes, you know, unique feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And it also made an impression on me because at the time, I had not seen much in the way of Japanese cinema, especially, you know, sort of the bio-horror realm of Japanese cinema, you know, thinking of classics like Akira or Tetsuo the Iron Man. But again, I didn't see the whole film. I forgot about this creature for the most part, but occasionally I would be reminded of him. And maybe it's because I've been watching the Boba Fett series with alien bounty hunters. Maybe that made me think of him again, but I was like, okay, I need to look this film up. I need to see who this mysterious creature was and what this film consisted of and give it a proper viewing.
And I would argue maybe you still don't know who this alien creature was because I don't think the movie really addresses that question much.
No, we don't know really where he's from or what he did to have a bounty hunter chasing after him. I mean, he could be the good guy for all we know, though. Probably not. So his backstory is not really fleshed out. All we're really told is that he's essentially some sort of bioweapon.
I'm going to buck expectations and argue that when it really comes down to it, much like the original Alien, Zairam is a movie about work and the workplace. You know, because it's not really about human relationships. It's not really about good versus evil. It's really about people trying to do their jobs. So you have a couple of power company guys who have a job to do. There are main human characters. And then you have your xenolegal bounty hunter who has a job to do. Mm-hmm. And she's our main sort of, you know, superhuman hero. And the movie is essentially what happens when those two groups trying to do their jobs jam into each other at cross purposes. It's like, you know, when you see a road partially blocked for digging on a pipe or something, and then there's a delivery driver who has to get through, but their truck won't fit the gap, and they start arguing, except add in space tentacles.
Yeah, I think you're essentially right here. I wonder what we're to make of the fact that Zairam itself is essentially a product in a humanoid form, you know? I don't know. Maybe there's nothing to be made of that, but cross my mind.
Oh, no, I can see it if he's a bioweapon. I mean, like, much like, you know, when I watch Alien, the movie raises lots of great questions, and I love it. But one of the ones I think people don't think about very often is, I'm like, man, if, like, the Weyland-Yutani Corporation had better workplace protections, like, if they had better, like, union regulations in place or something, mm-hmm. a lot of this could have been avoided. but probably all of it. But no, I mean, it's just like, it's a movie about work problems. And this is kind of the same. It's like, why did these two electricians have to go into the warehouse to investigate the alien technology themselves? Couldn't they have called a supervisor to deal with this?
Yeah. It seems like there should be more of a system in place. Shouldn't the police maybe get involved? I don't know.
Yeah, you'd think so.
All right. So the elevator pitch for Zayram, I feel like we've basically done it already. It's a alien bounty hunter, alien bounty taking place on Earth, drawing Earthlings into the wild cosmic scenario.
Did you say Earthlings?
Did I? I don't know. Earthlings? Earthlings? Maybe Earthlings is a maybe slang for Earthlings?
I like
it. In this universe, I'm expanding on the Zayram universe here already.
All right. Okay, so who made Zayram?
Oh, no, we got to have some trailer first, Jeff.
Oh, sorry. Okay, let's hear some trailer.
The people of Earth are about to be visited by some guests. While they're here, try and make them feel welcome. If you can't take the heat, get out of the galaxy.
Yeah, not a great trailer, in my opinion, but that's the English language trailer. The voiceover is a bit much, but we wanted to have something for you that wasn't just explosion sounds.
I mean, a big part of this movie is explosion sounds.
Yes.
Okay, so who made this thing?
All right, so the director, one of the writers, and the character designer is Kita Amamiya. Amamiya has an illustration background, born 1959, and I think the illustration background makes sense given just how visual this movie is. Like, this is a movie that's very much about, look at this. look at this monster. Look what happens when he has a costume change. You know, the character design elements are very strong in this.
I agree. So much so that there are even moments of this movie that look like hand-drawn illustrations. Like, there is an opening scene. Mm-hmm. Actually, it might be my favorite part of the whole movie is the black and white silhouette opening sequence. And when the outline of Zayram is first revealed before we see any of the, you know, the surface detail, Zayram kind of looks like an illustration. He looks like a hand-drawn animation until it's revealed, like, oh no, this is somebody in a costume lit from behind.
Yeah. And it's a pretty great costume. It's one of these where Zayram generally feels enormous, but has a very, you know, a very humanoid gait about him, very, you know, humanoid dimensions. I feel like it was very effectively done.
Heavy footfalls. Zayram likes to kind of clomp around on the floor. Yes.
Now, Amamiya has done a lot of work in design and effects, including, this is interesting, he was an effects animator on 1989's Gunhead, which we covered on Weird House in the past.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He's also worked as a character designer for video games such as Clock Tower 3, which I believe I played that one back in the day on like PS2. He was also involved in some Onimusha titles. And Zayram is very much his follow-up to his first full-length film, Cyber Ninja, from 1988, which I've not seen, but I looked at some stills from it, looked at least one clip. It looks like a lot of fun, and there are also some really out-there monster designs in it.
I have not seen it, but I will watch based on the title alone.
So he would go on to direct a sequel, Zayram 2, in 1994. And there was also a spin-off animated series that seemed to have quite a following, Iria, Zayram the Bounty Hunter. He's worked a lot over the years, though, and his filmography includes some Kamen Rider films and what seems like dozens of titles in the film TV franchise Garo, which, like these other titles, is a tokusatsu or live-action special effects drama, this time about a man in magical armor who has to protect humanity against the horrors, which I believe are some sort of demons. Now, Garo, I've seen, is sometimes described as a midnight tokusatsu series, as it, yes, contains like people and, you know, heroes in fancy armor or suits battling monsters, but it apparently has darker elements for grown-ups, and it's shown on TV like late at night. Zayram, however, is not midnight tokusatsu. This is tokusatsu for the whole family. Again, my 9-year-old son walked in and seemed to enjoy it and critiqued it a little bit.
Yeah, I'd say probably the scariest thing in here is, some shots of Zayram the monster have like that scary face thing that comes out of it, which we can talk about more. But probably the worst thing is that it like really bites the electrician's arm bad and leaves a big bloody welt. If you can deal with that, I think the movie's cool.
Yeah. Now, with the next, I want to hit the other writing credit on this, who is also the visual effects coordinator. And I think it becomes pretty obvious that we're kind of in Pumpkinhead territory with this film. this is a film, you know, by special effects people with very much a special effects design mentality that goes into it. So it's monster first, it's visuals first, and maybe the actual plotting and acting and so forth takes a backseat to all of that.
Now, your Pumpkinhead comparison, that was directed by Stan Winston, right? Am I right about that?
I believe so, yes. Yeah. That Stan Winston, of course, a legend of special effects. Yeah. Not so much, you know, a legendary director, but he did get in there. He got in there with Pumpkinhead in 1988. And he directed mostly some other short stuff. He directed a film titled A Gnome Named Norm from 1990 that I'd never heard of till just now. And he did some video shorts. But yeah, Pumpkinhead was his chance to really get in there and show what he could do. And it's mostly about a really cool monster. But you got some Lance Hendrickson in there too, I guess.
Yeah. It's an okay horror movie. It's a great looking horror movie.
Also featuring Dick Warlock.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so anyway, back to Zayram. Writing credit and visual effects coordinator goes to Hajime Matsumoto. As a writer, they only worked on the Zayram movies and three other titles, but Matsumoto has primarily worked in special effects, including some Godzilla movies, 1995's Gamera, Guardian of the Universe, which I love. That's a really fun one with a lot of like cute Gamera when he's little, and then he becomes your expected Gamera.
Is this the second movie we've mentioned in this episode called Guardian of the Universe with the subtitle Guardian of the Universe?
Yeah, I think, man,
that sets up a perfect sequel idea. Gamera versus Abraxas. They got to duke it out and figure out which one is the real Guardian.
Oh, it's got to be Gamera. I vote Gamera every time, especially over Ventura. But let's see. Oh yeah, but Matsumoto was also involved in the special effects on 1998's Ring, the original Japanese Ring upon which the American film The Ring was based. He also worked on some of the Ring sequels. He worked on Spiral, and he worked on The Grudge, both the Japanese version and the American remake.
All right, but we would not have a Space Bounty Hunter movie without our Space Bounty Hunter. So who plays this all-important character?
It is Yuko Moriyama playing Iria the Bounty Hunter. She was born in 1968, Japanese actor. This was her first role, apparently, and she went on to do the sequel, some TV. She was in Reborn from Hell 2, and it looks like she retired from acting between 2000 and 2004 and possibly went into some sort of education field.
For some reason, I usually just like to see that. I mean, assuming it wasn't caused by some bad experience or something, when somebody's just like, okay, I was acting for a while. No, I'm career change. I'm going to do something else.
Yeah, based on the limited English information I could find about it, it sounds like she eventually found her calling somewhere else. So yeah, more power to her.
Now, as we talked about, this movie doesn't place a lot of dramatic demands on its actors, but I'd say she's good. She fills this role quite well. She wears the power armor. She does good fight scenes. She has a good determined stare when facing down the monster. Thumbs up.
Yeah. Solid action performance. You know, she comes off as a badass. And unlike her AI helper Bob, she's kind of reckless. She's relentless. She's like, she's got to get her bounty. While Bob, the AI, is more concerned about, you know, how this is going to affect their license.
Oh yeah, their license.
Do they have the actual permit to use this particular super weapon against the alien and stuff like that?
Oh my God, that interminable argument at the beginning about the zone and whether using a zone will cause them to forfeit some percent of the bounty. And
See, we'll maybe get to we should have had more of that. It could have been the Shin Godzilla of Alien Bounty Hunter films.
Oh, that would be a good idea.
All right, so two Earthlings, or Earthlings, if you will, get sucked into this this whole situation. And the first of them we'll start with is, I believe his name is Tepe,
I think.
Tepe, the handsome electrician. Unknown age, this character is played by Kunihiro Ida, and very limited credits on this guy. He was in both the Zeram movies, doesn't seem to have been active in a long time. But then the other electrician, who's our funny electrician, our kind of obnoxious electrician, because, you know, that's kind of how, you know, your duo should go in a right. film like this. This is Kamiya, and he is played by Yukihiro Hotaru, born in 1951. Hotaru is very active still today, mostly on Japanese television. He made a career for himself initially playing detectives, usually in Japanese pink films. This is a broad category of erotic films in Japanese cinema, with some particularly sleazy titles. But he seems to have gradually crossed over into mainstream sci-fi and horror as well, ultimately starring or at least acting in a number of TV shows, even kids' films. He worked in that Garo series that I mentioned earlier. And you can ultimately see why, because he has a very charismatic face. He's constantly pulling funny, weird faces in this mm-hmm. film, so you can see why an actor like this would be sort of your go-to for sort of wonky character roles, certainly in recent decades.
Yeah, he's doing a zany Jim Carrey kind of thing.
Yeah. And we usually mention the music, so I'll go ahead and say that Hirokazu Ota is credited with the music. The score is a bit much in places for my taste, but it's pretty effective in other places. This individual also scored the film Roboman Hakaider from 1995, which I haven't seen, but I've noticed on shelves many times. It's another one of these sort of hero in armor or robot gear battles evil.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
All right. Well, you might have already guessed from the way we've been talking about it so far, this is not really one of those movies where it will make much sense to go scene by scene, since there really is very little plot. It is mostly a showcase for visual spectacles, you know, sci-fi tech battles, tentacle attacks, monster transformations, and so forth. But we can give you a general picture of the shape of the plot and then talk about some highlights that we really enjoyed. And the first highlight, I would say, is actually the very first thing in the movie. Strong, strong opening sequence. Might have been my favorite part of the entire thing. And interesting connections throughout this opening sequence to the Sautakar, because you have the, this background of deep chants, as if, you know, the moon monks are doing matins. Mm-hmm. But then also you have space marines in these egg-shaped EVA helmets, much like they're shown in the most recent Dune movie.
Yeah. So they're clearly here, or I don't know about it. They're here. They're there. They're somewhere, presumably in space, maybe on a spaceship or something.
Space station. Yeah.
To stop Zayram, and they don't stand a chance.
No. So what we see is a black and white silhouette of a creature who looks like a person wearing a wide brimmed hat, or perhaps somebody who has a large mushroom cap for a head. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to tell more than that because the person's in silhouette, except when it pauses to suddenly reveal a face, but not with the correct proportions for like a human face. So it's not a face that would fill what is presumably this creature's head. It's like a little tiny face. And it's in this pale makeup that looks kind of like a mask from No Theater, but with super nasty black teeth, like very scarified.
Yeah, and it when we zoom in on it, it often makes little noises, kind of like, stuff like that, which adds to the creepiness.
But then, okay, so it when we see the face is not proportional to the size of the head. It's much smaller. It's like a little cameo, little tiny face on this big head with the wide brimmed hat. And then the body of this creature looks like it is wearing some kind of fibery cloak. You know, it's like it's got a big kind of ragged cape.
Yeah, like it's been tromping through humanoid realms, and so it has taken on the guise of human clothing. And I think it adds to sort of the category confusion of this monster. Like, what is it? Is the thing and it the little face on its hat? Is that? Is there like some sort of a hybrid or at least a symbiotic relationship going on here? Or is that the face of the thing? It's wearing clothes. So is it cultured? Or is it just a brute beast? There are so many questions that rise to the surface.
Yeah. So the Space Marines unload their pulse rifles on the monster, but to no avail. The sombrero creature slaughters them all and escapes wherever it is this opening takes place. I imagine it's supposed to be some kind of exo prison. And we see in the very opening scene that it has a kind of xenomorph-like stabbing jaw-to-face attack that I think is done by that little tiny face on its hat.
Mm-hmm. But a lot of this action is taking place in like kind of extreme close-up. This is a film that likes close-ups at times that feel like a little bit too much. Like I felt like you could pan out on that row of weapons, and I would maybe get more out of the scene. But fair enough.
Okay, but next thing after the intro, we go to meet our main characters, who are all going about their business somewhere in modern-day Japan. So we meet our bounty hunter. This is Iria, and she is very on target. She's very on task. She will stop at nothing to capture or kill the Hat Beast. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't remember if they explained this anywhere in the movie, but she looks human. But I think she's supposed to be from another planet, right? She's not like a human who secretly went to space and became a bounty hunter, because this is not understood, as far as I can tell, to take place in the future or anything, when humans mm-hmm. have gone into space and some of them might be space bounty hunters.
Right. She is, I guess, what we might loosely think of as a space human, which to a certain extent is kind of the legacy of budget constraints on sci-fi,
Star Trek, yeah.
from various cultures and film cultures and, you know, in various decades where, yeah, you just can't have a crazy looking alien for everybody. Some of them got to be human. And I don't know, maybe it's something that's fleshed out more in the sequel or the TV series, but she is, we're never given any glimpse that like, oh, she may look human, but her blood is blue or purple. No, she's
right.
She just seems to be a human who happens to have this job, and maybe, I don't know, it's one of these things we're not supposed to think about too much, I guess.
Right. It's Plan 9 from Outer Space. The right. aliens just look human, except they're wearing a shiny shirt.
Yeah.
But the other possibility I was considering, again, I don't think they ever said this, but I was like, well, I wonder if she's like doing, I don't know, assuming the appearance of the dominant life form on this planet.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't that one of the elements in Critters where we had alien bounty hunters in that, but they ended up looking like people, but they weren't people?
That could be.
Yeah.
My Critters knowledge is abysmally low, so as we've, we've threatened a few times, we may have to break the critter seal on the show.
Yeah. It's just hard to choose. I don't know. We've talked about it, I think, off mic before, but each Critters movie offers its own alluring choices. I mean, do you go with Critters 1? I think, is that the one, or maybe it's the sequel that Leonardo DiCaprio is in it? But then by Critters,
the third one.
Is that the third one? Okay.
I don't know.
Two or three, perhaps. But then you have a pretty good cast in the first one. And then by part four, you have Brad Dourif showing up. So I don't know. There's so many directions to go. And then, of course, there are roly-poly alien creatures in all four of them. Some wonderful gremlin action.
Yes. Okay, so you got Iria. She's the main hero. She's the bounty hunter. But then you've got, Iria's got to have a sidekick, right? Sort of the nerd who does her computing for her. And in the case of this movie, you know, they're not going to just go another humanoid who acts kind of nerdy and does computing. They actually have a talking computer. It's just an AI sidekick who constantly explains to the viewer what is happening.
Yeah, yeah, Bob the AI, which I think one of the reasons I like this is this alone, and I'm not comparing this movie to Ian M. Banks' Culture series, but in those novels, you'll frequently have an individual who's often a member of the culture, and they have an AI that they're talking to all the time, and they're having little conversations and disagreements and so forth. So this felt, you know, not to say that this was even, you know, remotely inspired by it. It's a pretty, you know, I think common idea regarding science fiction, but it made me think of that a little bit.
Though Bob's got a little bit of personality. Bob is not just a, you know, purely giving the answers to, you know, he's not like a Google search result. Like he's got some thoughts of his own.
Yeah, yeah. Again, he's very into making sure that they get to keep their license, that any weaponry or tactics that they employ, that these are they have the correct certifications, that they're not going to get in trouble. So he's, you know, he's very much a very lawful mindset, and Iria has more of a chaotic mindset.
I'd say that's right. Yes. Yeah. So Bob is sort of lawful, neutral, and Iria is kind of chaotic good.
Yeah.
Okay, but then the other two main characters are our power company guys, and we mentioned them already, but you have Tepe, who is, he's handsome, sweet, shy, earnest. Don't have a lot of notes on Tepe. He's just kind of like, oh, he's a nice guy.
Yeah.
But then the other one you've got is Camilla, who seems a little bit older, and he is our fidgety clown. He but he ends up really coming through in a pinch at the end of the movie. And early on, Kamiya has a near meet cute with Iria the bounty hunter because she seems to be buying hundreds of apples and she drops one in the street and then Kamiya picks it up out of the gutter and tries to run after her. But I don't think they ever come face to face.
Not at that point, but of course, later on they meet and he's like, it's the woman from the street.
Though I don't know what the purpose of that is, like that opening sequence, because it's like, oh yeah, I saw you before. Anyway, so this movie, especially early on, is very heavy on technobabble. There is a long scene with Iria and Bob just discussing regulations on the technology they use. The main thing I think you need to understand is the concept of a zone. And so there's a long scene where Iria and Bob are talking about the idea of a zone. Here's my best interpretation of how it works. So Iria and Bob know that the monster, Zeram, is headed toward Earth, and they know that it will crash land at roughly a given place at a given time, and they get there before it. So in order to capture Zeram with as little risk as possible, Iria and Bob make an alternate dimension copy of the city district where Zeram is going to land and then somehow get him to land there instead of in the regular dimensional place. And this alternate dimension city district is known as a zone. It's like surrounded by invisible walls, and it's just like a regular city, except it has no people in it, except whoever teleports into that using Iria's transporter. And apparently you collect a reduced bounty if you, quote, use a zone, but you got to do what you got to do.
Ultimately, I like this aspect of the movie. Like, it adds an extra little wrinkle to it. And I'm not sure how much of it is them wanting to do something cool with kind of like, oh, they're not battling the alien just on the streets. They're battling it in this strange shadow zone. Or if it's kind of like, well, if they're battling in the zone, we don't have to have any extras or worry about why the police aren't showing up.
Right. So most of this movie just takes place in the zone. So like you say, there's no need for extras. And there was one scene where they cut back to the regular world and they show like the people that the electricians were supposed to be partying with later that night hanging out, and like they're not there, but they're like, oh, I don't miss them. I don't care that they're not here.
Yeah, that was strange. Yeah. Oh, but by the way, I should ask at this point, did you watch, we both used the same Blu-ray copy on this. Mm-hmm. Did you do dubbed or subtitled?
Subtitles.
You did subtitles. Okay.
Yeah.
I did the thing where I wasn't sure, because sometimes there's a drastic difference between subtitles and the dub on films like this. So I did the thing at first where I had both going on, and I was, you know, you kind of like trying to split my head by following both and seeing like which one was the way to go. And I quickly decided, okay, there doesn't seem to be a tremendous difference. Maybe the subtitles are a little tighter, but I don't think I'm missing out on a lot of plot if I just go ahead and employ the dub instead.
I mean, it always varies by case, but I think in general, dubs are a great option for like silly movies, B movies and stuff like that. I think, you know, I gravitate more towards subtitles if it's like they're real strong dramatic performances by the original actors, and you kind of want to hear their original tone and things, even if you don't understand the language, and just rely on the subtitles for the semantic. But yeah, I mean, in a monster movie, I think dubs are great.
Okay. Well, we'll come back to this because there'll be two points where I want to know if you have a different understanding of what was occurring based on the subtitles versus my understanding via the dubs.
Oh, but we didn't finish talking about the zones because
let's get back in the zone.
Okay, right. So the one last thing with the zone is like you can't just walk into or out of a zone. Like a zone, again, it's an alternate dimension. It's surrounded by invisible walls, and you have to have some kind of teleporter device that Iria has set up in her command center in an empty warehouse in order to teleport in and teleport out. And multiple times in the movie, these teleporting devices get broken, and that prevents somebody from going one way or the other. But okay, Iria and Bob are discussing zones, discussing bounties, discussing regulations and technology. Meanwhile, Tepe and Kamiya, our power company guys, are trying to finish all the jobs they've got left on their list for the day, because at least one of them has a date that they need to get to. I don't remember. I think it's Kamiya. Or maybe both of them do. Anyway.
But I think Tepe has an actual date, and Kamiya is just like hanging out at the bar, right?
Yeah. Kamiya needs to go hang out with people who don't actually like him.
Yeah.
So one job that they have to deal with before they can finish up for the day is that somebody is stealing electricity. So they are called to the location where this is allegedly happening. They arrive at a warehouse where somebody has rigged up a bootleg power line coming off of the pole. And instead of just cutting the line, they have to go into the warehouse to investigate. And lo and behold, it's the command center. It's full of weird blinking, beeping gizmos.
Time to start touching stuff.
Right. Yeah, let's just put our hands all over this. Long story short, the two electricians accidentally get teleported into the zone along with Iria. Zayram arrives, and this leads into the rest of the movie, which is just one long chain of fights, chases, monster attacks, and monster transformations.
Yeah, all in kind of dreary, mostly dreary-looking industrial locations that, you know, fit the zone and fit this style of movie. Though there is also a wonderful-looking, I think it's a playground, like a really modern, like early 90s Japanese playground. I didn't look this up to try and figure out where this was, but it looks really cool. I look at this and I'm like, yeah, I want to head there.
I want to play on that. Yeah. And so from here on out, I think because it's just sort of fights and chases and transformations, maybe we can just focus on highlights. The first big fight between Zayram and Iria is great. It involves energy weapons, ballistic weapons, strange traps. Like Iria has all these different kinds of traps. Like one shoots out all these tethers that wrap up the monster. Mm-hmm. One is like it shoots up these spikes that surround the monster, and they're like metal spikes, and I think it has to like bend them down. But then it also has hand-to-hand fighting. Iria has the full gamut of bounty hunter skills, so it seems like she is a trapper first and foremost, and she likes using this device that encases someone within like a giant crystal. But then when a fight breaks out, she throws down.
Yeah, she does have a wonderful array of sort of Mandalorian-esque or Predator-esque weaponry, you know, all the various bells and whistles.
But of course, Zayram has his own tricks, and one of them, one of the weirdest ones, I thought, was that he throws out these bioprisms that like hatch open and then release these creatures, these weird googly-eyed critters that look like a cross between Final Stage Brundlefly, E.T., and the baby from the 90s puppet sitcom Dinosaurs.
Yeah, yeah. And there's one, he hatches multiple of these things. Again, it's like a little sea, organic seed pod looking thing. When it breaks open, it kind of like whatever's inside rapidly grows and mutates into this kind of squat goblinoid creature that runs around and squeeze and stuff. There's one that pops up later on that has three faces and not just one. And the faces kind of remind one of the baby masks from Brazil.
And they make a kind of noise too, don't they?
Yeah, like they're kind of a squee noise. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. These are not they're not doing, you know, heavy booted martial arts like Zayram is. They're just sort of going like and like running at the at the heroes.
Yeah, it's almost like he's weaponizing some other technology. These things are mostly just distractions. They're not going to really make a huge tactical difference. He's not hatching like elite hunter killers. These are not his hunting dogs. These are just like blithering clone goblins that are just there to cause a distraction.
Agreed, yes.
But I love them.
Yeah, I like them too. And there's a number of them throughout the movie. There was one part, though, I thought it was funny where the electricians are figuring out what's going on. And I think Iria says to them, at least this was how it was in the subtitles, she goes, "Don't you get it now? We're in an alternate dimension." And then one of the electricians goes, "You're right."
Mother's Day is coming, and Mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules.
So instead of getting mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for mom is Mother's Day. Because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit BARTESIAN.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for mom at the best price for you. Artesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Now, one of my favorite sequences in this occurs, I want to say, you know, more or less halfway through the film. You know, we've already had the initial battle with Zayram. Then we get this scene where you know, Zayram has a run-in with our two humanoid characters. And I think at this point, it's been established that the humans are on their own in the zone. And Iria has been, like, ejected from the zone and can't get back in due to, like, gadget reasons, right?
Yeah, the transporter breaks or something.
Yeah, so this is where it gets fun, because we know she can hold her own against Zayram and, right, and effectively capture Zayram, but then she gets booted. Our two human characters mess things up, accidentally free Zayram, and Zayram has to figure out what he's going to do. And so we have Zayram still in this this form of this hulking bioweapon, you know, clothed in this shroud and having this, you know, large hat-like head. We already know that he can rapidly grow grotesque goblinoids to do his bidding. And in a previous scene, he used that the mouth or the face on the hat. It kind of came out like a tentacle, and it bit one of the human's arms.
Cameo, yeah.
Yeah, like tore off a bit of skin. So, it has a tissue sample. So we go to this scene where it's just Zayram alone in this, open industrial space. And he removes the cloth from his mouth region, and he spits up one of these. He kind of, like, you know, flexes his muscles, strains, spits up one of these seed pods, but instead of throwing it and letting it hatch, he crushes it in his big muscular hand, and some sort of clone slime drips out of it, pools up on the ground, begins to bubble, and rapidly grows into a kind of half-formed clone of Kamiya, or at least the head, one arm and part of the torso just laying there in a pile. And it's really grotesque and wonderful. It mostly just spits up clone goop. But then Zerium seems to wordlessly question this thing. And then the goblin clone responds with kind of alien gibbering and also a little more oozing of clone goo from the mouth. And then, satisfied with all this, Zerium then crushes the goblin clone underfoot. I absolutely love just the alien weirdness of this whole scene. One of these scenes where there are no humans at all. It's just monsters doing monster things and having some sort of conversation that we can scarcely understand.
Now, this is one of the one scenes I would say, if somebody was thinking about showing this movie to a very little kid, I don't know, this one's pretty grotesque.
Yes.
And it's kind of pathetic the way the creature is like, no, and Zeram's just like, done with you, and then squashes him.
Now, did this have subtitles in your version?
No, it didn't.
Okay, excellent. That's good. I would be disappointed, first of all, if I missed out on this the details of this conversation, but I ultimately like not knowing. Like, as a human viewer, we're just completely cut out on the details here. Like, what is he just saying, hey, where did that guy go? And he's like, oh, he's over there. I was like, all right, good, squash. But maybe he's getting more information about the planet. I'm not sure. It's a lovely scene. This, I believe, is the scene that I saw on television, and it just stuck with me because it was just so strange.
Yeah, this is a great one. They push the weirdness past 11. It's it's off the charts here. Another thing that stuck with me was, I wonder if you agree, there's a part in this movie that I think is a direct homage to Aliens, because yes. There is a scene where they're fighting with Zeram, and then suddenly it pans over to reveal somebody coming in to say that I think Tepe is being threatened, but then it pans over and here's Kamiya driving an excavator. He's working some heavy machinery and I think it's like framed and staged with the same kind of lighting and stuff as when Ripley comes out in the power loader fight at the end of Aliens. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. And it seems like that's where they're going to go. Oh, we're going to have kind of a ripoff of that scene where it's going to be Bulldozer versus Zerium. But then it ultimately ends up being for comedic payoff, right? Because doesn't Zerium just sort of like swat the Bulldozer and turns it over?
Zerium, yeah.
Yeah, and then Kamiya just runs for it. So I like that. Ultimately a successful scene. If they'd actually had it be kind of this fight, which I think they've done. Didn't they do that in Carnosaur? Doesn't a Bulldozer fight a dinosaur in Carnosaur?
Oh yeah, somebody gets into like a bobcat or something, smaller Bulldozer, little mini dozer.
Nobody wants to see that. I mean, Ripley did it best using a space Bulldozer suit. I don't want to see just a normal Bulldozer fight a dinosaur. Now I have another question for you, Joe, regarding dubs and subtitles. Okay, so a large part of this film is that the humans are trapped in the zone with Zeram. And then Inyria is stuck on the outside. Okay, but then the humans get in trouble with Zeram, and then Inyria jumps in and saves them, saves the day.
Yeah.
And I don't, if it was established how she was able to do that, I missed it.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of stuff like that. I know what you're talking about, and I don't remember. I think they must have fixed it somehow, and then they just like don't show her teleporting or something. It's like, oh, here she is. You know, Bob got it all put together.
Okay.
But
it's ultimately not that important. But
No. But there's some gaps like that. And a lot of what Inyria and Bob are doing later on is they're like trying to put together like the super cannon or something, or trying to get permission to use it or something.
Yeah, there is some question from Bob, especially if they have authorization to use the super weapon. And then they have to get it there. And then once it's there, it has to be assembled. And clearly our electricians are not quite up to the task. So Inyria has to slap it together. And it's a pretty cool weapon when she fires it off.
Though I like some of the more low-tech fighting you see the electricians doing, because, and I think we're going to talk about the monster transforming into different stages in a minute, but at one of its stages, it's attacking the two electricians and they just start piling furniture on top of it, which I thought was very funny.
Yeah. There's another scene where I want to say that the monster is either thrown into or throws somebody else into one of your just go-to set pieces in a film like this, a wall of cardboard boxes.
Yes. Clearly empty.
Mm-hmm. All right, so yeah, this is a film about the monsters, about the monster itself here, and one of the great things about it is that it goes through multiple stages. Again, like you said, this is a film where "Behold my true form" happens again and again.
Yeah.
So we have stage one Zerium, which we've largely described, clothed, hulking, humanoid warrior, and in my opinion, this is Zeram at his best. And realizing here, I may be saying Zerium at times instead of Zeram.
It's okay.
Who knows? But I think Zeram, the Tennessean version, is correct. Anyway, this primary look, primary Zeram, tremendous clothing accessory options, numerous bioweapons, really comes off well. But then eventually Zeram gets blasted and we get stage two Zeram, which is a skeletal, multi-limbed walker. And this one's a lot of fun because it's a stop-motion effect, which mm-hmm. obviously has limitations in a film like this. It even has limitations when it's done especially well, like in a Ray Harryhausen or like RoboCop 2. But generally examples of really well-done integration of live action and stop-motion. But still, the monster looks great in this.
Yeah, it does. It's sort of a mix of an insect and like a mammal skeleton.
Yeah, multi-limbs lashing around. Pretty fun. But eventually that gets blasted too, and we're off to stage three Zeram, which it had been established earlier that only the head is important.
I think they literally say hat.
Just the hat. Okay, so they're like, just worry about the hat.
So they call it the hat.
At this point, Zeram is reduced to just that hat, shroom cap stingray thingy, and it flies around, floats around, kind of looking like a rubber bat on a string. It reminds me a lot of various flying kaiju monsters.
Yes.
So maybe less compelling, but very much expected.
I feel like maybe a kaiju movie that we watched for this show had a monster that could transform into something that looked like this flying mushroom cap or stingray thing.
Mm. Was it the Godzilla movie?
Was it? Did the pollution monster have a flying stingray form?
Hmm. It might
have. I don't
remember. Anyway, they eventually capture the stingray hat thing. They get it sealed up in its crystal. But, of course, it gets out of that as well.
Again.
And then we get one last pretty great transformation where the hat is like upside down and a whole bunch of like mutation stuff starts boiling out of it. A very John Carpenter's The Thing-esque transformation. And yes. Then it transforms into this The Thing-esque abomination, which this was, I guess, the logical place to go. Like at this point, Zeram is backed in a corner. It's just going to mutate a bunch and just lash at you with a bunch of tentacles and teeth and mouths and so forth. I feel like this incarnation of Zeram was maybe a bit ambitious, and the full monster comes off a little stiff here, but it's still pretty cool.
Well, it has, at this point, though, it has also, because it has incorporated some human DNA from Kamiya, I think, it has like little human body parts coming out of it.
Yeah,
it's got like nipples and stuff.
Yeah, it looks like there might be a boob on it.
Yeah,
but not in a way that like is distressing, I guess. Just kind of like, oh, I guess that's supposed to be a human breast.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Now, that would have been an interesting way to go if it had taken Kamiya's form as the final form. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Like if it had gone full, like they just made a clone of him, but a defective one.
Oh, you know what would have been another great ending? They should have done this. I know we squashed the Kamiya half clone earlier, but wouldn't it have been great for like a post-credit sequence where it's Kamiya's friends at the bar, but the clone has shown up to hang out with them, and it's like hanging out at the bar and has a drink, but it's still like spitting up clone goo.
So they're in the middle of talking about how they don't miss Kamiya and they don't mind that he couldn't make it, but then he does show up and he's just bleeding goo everywhere, and they're like, oh, hey, we were just talking about you.
Yeah, titters in an alien voice, and they just don't notice.
A couple more things that I thought were interesting about the ending. One is that in the end, Kamiya has to come through and save the day by using electrician knowledge.
Yes.
Like he has to repair the wiring, I think, multiple times in order to, power up the device they're using to defeat the monster in the end.
Yeah, this is really great. And it made me wonder, not enough to actually watch it, but in the Super Mario Brothers movie, did the Super Mario Brothers end up using their plumbing skills to save the day against Dennis Hopper?
That would be a good twist.
Yeah.
It's been
I've seen it and I don't remember.
That movie's weird. That's a contender for the show.
That is a strange film. I cannot imagine that the Chris Pratt Mario Brothers remake is going to really equal excel in creating the same kind of weird cinematic experience.
Wait, is Chris Pratt playing Mario, Super Mario?
That is what Seth, I believe, was telling us the other day.
Okay, yeah. So they went from Bob Hoskins to Chris Pratt.
Yeah, well, it's a different take on the source material.
Okay. Oh no! One last thing. Final comment about the movie. I like how it ends with a graduation photo.
Yes.
Why? I don't know. All the humanoids. So after the monster is defeated, Iria, Kamiya, Tepe, they're like, hey, let's all pose for a photo. And Bob just like, they stand together and pose and Bob takes their picture. And then it's like best friends, friends forever.
It's so wholesome. I love it. Yeah. So yeah, this is not a film that is going to really hit you with a lot of mysteries and intrigue and double crosses and so forth. The plot's pretty simple. The payoffs are pretty much everything you'd expect. But wonderful, weird monster. And I think this is one of those films, kind of like Pumpkinhead to a certain extent, is you see action figures and costumes and fan art depicting the monster. Like the monster has really sort of, is really kind of more popular than the film itself, it seems to be the case.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Now, a little credit where credit's due here. When I first started poking around for places to watch this film, I could not find Zayram anywhere. I think Zayram 2 was available as a streaming option or at least a digital purchase option. And the anime spinoff TV series was also available that way. But it looked like I was going to have to obtain a physical copy for sure. So I inquired with the good people at Atlanta's own Videodrome video rental store about it. And they said, sorry, we don't have a copy. But then they wrote me back and said, actually, we just ordered a copy of it. We've ordered the 30th anniversary Blu-ray. And so that came in, and that's how we got to watch it. It's, I think, a solid Blu-ray release from Media Blasters. It includes a couple of trailers and also a making-of feature that I believe popped up on a previous Laserdisc edition.
Ooh, oh man. Can you imagine the experience of watching this on Laserdisc?
Yeah. I watched part of the making-of video, but it's pretty bad. Like they're talking to the director and the star, and the director's like, I wanted to make a film that was fun. So making a fun film was my primary goal here.
Okay.
So it was, that sort of thing. I don't know. Maybe there's some more in-depth stuff about the effects later on. But anyway, if you live in Atlanta, you can certainly go to Videodrome and rent the same Blu-ray disc that we watched it on. You can also check out Videodrome at videodromeatl.com. And if you want to get some of their merch, and they have a lot of cool merch, you can go to videodrome.tv. So thanks again to the guys at Videodrome for hooking us up with our Zayram. All right, if you want to check out more Weird House Cinema, it happens every Friday in the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast feed. We're primarily science and sometimes culture, or sometimes philosophy podcast, primarily science, though. But on Fridays, we set most of that aside, and we enter the zone where there's nothing to worry about except for maybe a strange monster and some questionable acting performances, that sort of thing.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, Seth Nicholas Johnson. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.